This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP President, Money Manager, Steve Peasley.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Friday edition of Invest Talk. Invest Talk is heard on the radio in California, live streaming on investtalk.com at 4 to 5 Pacific time, every Monday through Friday. And, of course, for all our podcast listeners, you can listen to it anytime you want. You download it and listen to it when at your convenience. So I do appreciate all listeners. Because you listen to this program, and maybe others like it, you get a pretty good dose of financial news. You follow the market. You're hoping for some clues, some insight. Maybe that will help you make better choices. Everybody does that. You know, anybody listening to this show probably is pretty diligent about that. And maybe give us all, give yourself a little head start on any new products or trends, because we're all looking for that thing. But just as important, you know, you're looking for that next great investment. But just as important, maybe you need to step back a little bit and focus on the overall portfolio that you have. Maybe you're standing a little too close. You're focusing a little too close on this stock or that stock or this ETF or that ETF, and you're not appreciating the overall risk and the balance of your portfolio. And you lose sight of your goal. Maybe your goal is for growth and you're buying big blue chip stocks that pay dividends. But that's not your goal. Your goal is growth. Not saying don't buy them. I'm saying you got to step back a little bit and find out, you know, does your portfolio match the risk that you want to take and match the goals you've set for yourself? What happened, for instance, if you set a goal of a price stability and you're buying high-risk stocks? That's not stability. You get it now because the market's been in this very long bull market. But at some point, what happens if you have a 2008? How are you going to react if your portfolio is not prepared for that and you are not, because you're investing differently than your risk tolerance is? Then you're going to have a very difficult time emotionally being prepared. You know, you're going to sell at the bottom like too many people out there do, because it's not, the portfolio is not acting like you thought it might, but you didn't set it up to act like you thought it might. You got carried away with the minutiae. You got to be careful. Everybody has to be careful. So decide what your goal is, and then make sure your portfolio reflects that goal and the risk tolerance that you have. That, you know, and I know that word risk tolerance. What does that mean? Well, you can go to our website. There's a risk an analyzer there that will tell you from 0 to 100 what your risk tolerance is. Very simple, few questions, and boom, gives you a score. You know, the closer to zero, the less risk you want to take. So if you're down 20, 30, 35, 40, you're pretty low tolerance for risk. If you're at 60, 70, 80, you're pretty high tolerance for risk. Then look at your portfolio, and does it match that? We can help you with that. Anyways, so what money matters on your mind today? And we do want to hear about your portfolio mix. I really do. Or you can call, listen to me anytime you want, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and get your question into me. No matter what your question is, as long as it's financial, I want to help you. So let's get to our 24-hour listen line, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, my name is John. I'm calling from Walnut Creek. I have a question about offshore oil drillers. Notice that companies like Transocean, Ensco, Noble Energy, there's others, Seadrill, Gulf, they trade at very low PEs, and some Transocean's at like a 10-year low. Is it that we're just finding more gas and oil on land, and so that we're not needing to drill offshore? Is it also because of environmental issues that they're not allowing offshore oil drilling to occur off the coast, California, for example? Or is it related to just gradual lowering of oil prices. I was just curious if now is a good time to buy them because some of these companies are so cheap, or should we hold off a little longer? Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, that's going to be one of my talking points, commodities. But Transocean is an oil driller, and oil, of course, is one of the major commodities out there. But it probably has nothing to do with those things you suggested. I would think, and I'm going to tell you what I think, and it's all about supply and demand. We have had for some time a glut of oil. And you would think, look at the price of oil recently. I still think it's higher than it should be, and it's around $95. Think about all the turmoil in the Middle East and that those crazy ISIS people all that turmoil, and oil did not spike. Well, because we have plenty of it. You have China slowing down. You have the European Union falling into recession, or at least flat, probably going into recession. And you have us who are now exporting gasoline. We're exporting certain products. Okay? And we're finding more and more oil with our fracking, and it's just going to go up, not down. So you got a supply and demand issue, and the supply is high. So companies like Transocean, which, by the way, we own in some of our managed accounts, provides offshore contract drilling for oil and gas wells. Well, their sales are going down. 2 years ago, sales growth were 24% in the quarter of September 2012. Today, June quarter 2014, sales growth shrank 2%. I mean, it's as simple as that. Even though it's cheap, it's really inexpensive, pays a high dividend. All those things you said is true. It's cheap. Now, your best question you have is, should you start picking them up when they're cheap like this? And a part of me wants to say, yeah. Yeah, well, you want to buy things when no one else wants them. There's another part of me that says, we haven't had a decent correction for the overall market forever, and these types of companies will correct. And we are having, we had a big run-up in commodities for a number of years, and now for the last 2 years, we've had a run-down in commodities. The question you're asking is the run-down in commodities at its bottom. That's a much more difficult question to answer. Chart looks bad on Transocean, which symbol is RIG, by the way, RIG. But very good question. Might be, you need to put these kinds of things on your watch list because, you know, at a 7 and 8 PE, 9 PE, you want to look at them. But their numbers are not, fundamentals are kind of weakening. But how weak will they actually get? Very good question. $7,000 per household on average. Statistics published by the Federal Reserve indicate Americans have about $856 billion in outstanding credit card debt. Billion. $856 billion. Or $7,000 per household. That's how much you owe. How do you dig yourself out of debt? That's one of our main talking points today. I think it's a very good talking point. You should never got it in the first place, but, of course, now you're in it. Now how do you get out of it? We'll talk about it. And I'm going to talk about commodities. Commodities are raising more red flags, especially for Europe. Okay, and think about what else will happen around the world if commodities are raising a red flag. Inflation data kind of ties in. European inflation data ties in with commodities at this point. But remember Draga in Jackson Hole in his speech, what is he going to do if inflation comes in, you know, much lower? And we got some inflation data, and it wasn't that much lower. So now what are they going to do? They have a meeting next week, the ECB, European Central Bank, you know, like our Federal Reserve Bank. They have a meeting. They're going to come out with something. They're going to say something. Are they going to do anything? Don't know. We'll talk about that. No, set it and forget it in retirement. You know how there's an article I was reading. And, you know, I've complained about them before, and I'm going to complain about them again, and I'll complain about them for a long time, and that's those target-dated funds. You know, those are set it and forget it because the mutual fund family wants you to set it and forget it. That's their whole goal. And they're all over the retirement accounts, and they're not good. They're not going to turn out to be good. They're going to underperform forever. You watch. 10 years now, 15 years now, we're going to look back at those target date funds and say, boy, those haven't done very well. But what about other things concerning retirement? What about Social Security? Just, you know, are you sure it's all going to be there? And how much money do you actually get? We're going to talk about it because people, you know, you get that report from Social Security and it says you're going to, by the time you retire 5 years, 10 years from now, you're going to get this much money. That's not necessarily so if you decide to retire now and not contribute anymore until you start collecting. It won't be that number because they're taking assumptions. We got to talk about that. We have to make sure you're understanding this because it's... I think there's some misconceptions out there. Anyway, try our free personal risk analyzer. You know, it's right there on investtalk.com. It's really simple. It takes you a couple of minutes. Just a few questions. None of them are real personal. They ask questions about your risk. How much risk do you want to take? Would you risk this much loss to gain this much gain in this period of time? Would you risk an 8% loss to gain a 20% in the next 6 months? So you could lose 8, but you could gain 20. Would you take that risk? Yes or no? That's the kind of questions they ask. It's really simple, but it really works. You can do it for free, a free personal risk analysis on investtalk.com. This is InvestTalk on a Friday. We're here to help you. Bring your money topic to us, 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk continues now with a reminder about the resources available to InvestTalk insiders. How about a list of commodity ETFs that allow investors to gain exposure to various areas of the commodity industry? Become an insider. Sign up for free right now on InvestTalk.com. You're listening to an encore presentation of InvestTalk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next InvestTalk.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Credit card debt. So on average, you have $7,000 per household. And how are you going to get out of that? Well, one way is to try to keep it cheap, okay? There are deals now that you can transfer credit card debt to other credit card companies, you know, banks or whatever, and they'll charge you 0% interest for 6 months or 8 months or a certain period of time. So that might be a good start to try to reduce it. But the key to this thing is stop using it. And it's not stop using credit cards. It's stop using credit card debt. Stop using it as a way of life. And if you have no discipline, you need to cut up all credit cards that will let you, you know, roll over your debt from month to month to month. Only use like an American Express card requiring you to pay it off every month if you have no discipline. If you have discipline and you're really trying to work your way out of this, then you try to cheapen the debt that you have now by trying to find a 0% interest rate somewhere. Don't use your credit cards unless you have to. Don't buy shirts or dinners or anything else. You know, if you have no discipline or very little discipline, stop using a credit card. Now, it's hard to say that for everybody because if you have discipline, I love those cash back credit cards. I get cash back on mine. I pay mine off every month. And I still get cash back. I kind of like that. You know, I get sometimes, you know, if I buy something that's worthwhile, it's get a pretty good check. Maybe that's something you should think about. Gotta control it. Control it.
Do you have questions about FDIC security, mortgages, losses to your retirement plans? Give us a call today, 888-99-CHART.
This is InvestTalk. Can I sell a house in a reverse mortgage? We'll have an answer for you coming up. Give me a call. Your number, our number, 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. And this is InvestTalk.
Thanks for being a podcast subscriber. And even though you listen after our daily production time, you can still be part of the discussion. Your questions and comments set the tone and the topics, so please participate. Just call 888-99-CHART anytime. And if you'd like to talk live to Steve and Justin, just make that call between 4 and 5 p.m. Pacific time. Invest Talk continues on this Friday, factoring in the boomer bubble. That's our talking point for the next Invest Talk, and we hope you'll be here. Got a question today? Why not talk to Steve about it? 888-99-CHART is how to get through right now. You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though. 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART. And Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
The question is, can you sell a house in a reverse mortgage? You have a reverse mortgage on your house. Can you sell it? And the answer is, of course you can sell it. But you have to go back to the premise of why you have the reverse mortgage in the first place. And I will say that you've made a mistake in getting the first reverse mortgage if you planned on selling the house someday. Remember, a reverse mortgage is designed for you to get money, equity, out of the house without ever having to pay anything, okay, out of your pocket. Zero, nada, nothing. So when you're old and you want to live in that house until you die, there you go. It's a perfect solution. Mind you, it's a last resort, not a first resort. But if you're going to sell the house, then you kind of defeated the purpose. Now, there are going to be reasons why you need to sell it. I understand that. But remember, a reverse mortgage is expensive. It's expensive to take. Remember, because even though they did make the prices less, so it's better that way. And the reason why it's expensive, they're not going to get any money until you move from the house and are forced to sell it, or you pass away in the house. Okay, so they're not going to get a dime. That could be years. So they like to get a half a point, 2 points, or a point and a half, whatever it is up front, and they're going to charge you pretty hefty on the closing costs at the upfront part. And of course, their interest rates would probably be a little bit higher because they're going to charge you interest on all the money. So yeah, you can sell a house in reverse mortgage, but you don't do a reverse mortgage unless you're pretty sure you want to stay in that house and you plan on staying in that house till the end of your days. We're here for you whenever you want. Beginner or experienced questions are always welcome. All the investors' level of investing knowledge, whatever questions you ask, it's okay. There's a million people out there with the same questions. 888-99-CHART. And if you're a podcast listener and you can't reach us during our live program, 4 to 5 Pacific time, you still can leave a question. Same number. How about Mike and Santee?
I had a quick question for you about stops, where to place them. And what happened is I got into the market pretty heavily, and I picked a lot of winners there. And so they went up a little bit. I put my stops pretty much at the support level where I bought them. That was the reason I bought them, because they were down at that point.
Right.
Now, they went up, and then I didn't know when to adjust or kind of where to put the stop, so I kind of just let them sit at the point that I bought them. So what happened is I went up, and then I went back down, and I got stopped out of pretty much everything that I bought, which I made a good profit, but then I lost it all back. So my question is, where and when and how often should I adjust those stops to save some of that profit?
Okay. We adjust our stops on a daily basis, but you can't realistically do that. You cannot. So if you have a job, you've got work to do. You can't sit here and spend a couple hours every night looking at adjusting your stops. It's just not possible. But what you need to do is at least look at them at the very minimum once a week and reset them once a week.
Okay.
If you see a stock, let's say you bought a stock at a great support level, like you say you did, Mike.
Uh-huh.
And you say, okay, this is about where they stop going down. This is a really good buy point. And then it rises up. There's several rules that you can establish for yourself, and you can pick what's comfortable to you, but one of them is followed up with an 8% stop. In other words, anytime it's below 8%, if it's high, you get out. That's the investor's business daily rule. And that's nothing wrong with that rule. I find it kind of arbitrary because some stocks are very volatile and some stocks are not. and you get stopped out too quick on some, and then some others you take a big hit because it takes a long time to get down to 8%.
Yeah.
So I adjust it per the stock, and many times it could be, you know, I like to draw trend lines. If you think the market is getting too heady, you can draw a tight trend line. It breaks the trend line, you're out. You know,
so the more money you start to make off of it, the more profit you should start to tighten up your stops a little bit.
Exactly. It's rising, rising, rising. For instance, we had a stock, it doubled on us, and we tightened up our stop, and we got stopped out of because it was down 20%. So we had it up 100%, lost 20%, 80% was our out. We got out. So, yeah, we'll take that gain. Let's say you buy a support and it breaks support right away. Mm-hmm. Then you got to get out.
Yeah.
Just get out. You don't worry about it. You can buy it back.
Uh-huh.
Every time it's a little bit different, Mike, on each stock. And I would reset it at least once a week. We take a look at them and say, okay. And think about how much money you want to lose of your gains.
Okay.
You may say, I'm just going to hold this for the long haul and not going to worry about it. That's okay, too. Long haul means years, though, not months.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so that's okay, too. So you can make different rules for each one, but you need to make the rules and adjust them on a weekly basis if you're a trader and you want to lock in profits.
Okay, thanks for the help.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for the call.
Another information source to help you improve your investing skills and gain you some stress-relieving perspective is our KPP Premium newsletter. It comes out each Friday, and one of the most popular features is our Stock Watch. At least a couple of companies are introduced to you to watch in each edition. To sign up, just go to investtalk.com today.
I have a new meeting day for Northern California. I am scheduling one-hour individual retirement account meetings and reviews in San Jose on September 17th. If you'd like to schedule an hour with me, just go to investtalk.com and click on Make an Appointment, and I will definitely work out the details. Our number, 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Give me a call.
Now is a good time to call InvestTalk.
I had a question on my 401k.
We're here for you. What's your question? 888-99-CHART is how to reach Steve right now on InvestTalk. Invest Talk with portfolio manager Steve Peasley. How can you gauge your appetite for risk? Try our free risk analysis tool. It's there for you on investtalk.com. You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Okay, European stocks trimmed their gains after inflation data was released. So because, remember, Draga and Jackson Hole said that he's ready to do QE3 if inflation, if they fall in or have the danger of falling to deflation. Well, the problem with that is their inflation for August was up 0.3%. And that was less than July, which was up 0.4%. So, you know, there's a deflationary pulse going on, but nothing dramatic. So that's why the stocks fell. Why would they fall? Because everybody's thinking, you know, and has been that, oh, Draga, ECB president, European Central Bank president, is going to do a QE. And he even said so on the speech this week that, yeah, he's prepared to do that if he needs to do that. But the evidence in the economy, even though they are flat to shrinking into a recession, the evidence on inflation is not there for them to do that. Remember, they already did something. A month or so ago, they lowered interest rates to negative territory. So they've been pushing on that, and that helped push the stock market in Europe up. Even though their economies are stinking, it still pushed it up. And so now they're thinking, well, if we get QE, maybe that'll make it even, make it even better, because all that flooding of cash, look what it did in the United States stock market. So they're thinking about starting QE, and we're getting close to being finished with QE. We're now moving into September. And remember, they were going to be done by October. I think we're at $25 billion a month they're spending. So they're still spending the money, they meaning the Fed, every month. They're still pushing liquidity in the market, but much less than it was. It was 85, now it's 25. They're going to cut it down to, in September, by $10 billion. And the hint was they'll cut it down to zero in October. Now we'll be out of QE. Now what would be the next move? Don't think they can't re-up QE, re-ramp it up. They could. If the Federal Reserve sees our economy falling or something dramatic happens, they could start it back up. Nothing to stop them. But the thinking is they're not going to do it. They'll do something else if they need to. And the thinking is, if our economy is showing signs of improvement, which it has, even though it's not very consistent, it's sputtering, but improvement, then are you going to raise rates in 2015? And that's what the market is thinking about. That's what's on everybody's mind. Raising rates means less liquidity. We're already cutting liquidity. Now would we cut it more? Remember, the stock market looks forward. And the same thing they're doing in Europe, they're looking forward. So, but they don't have inflation at this point. And just so you know, the EU-wide unemployment rate is 11.5%. And in Italy, it is 12.6%. By the way, that's the highest unemployment rate in Italy in 40 years. So they're not doing so hot there in Europe. And then you add the sanctions and the Russian issue, and it's going to be difficult for them to not fall into a deeper recession, in my personal opinion. Our podcast listeners from all over the world download our program. If you'd like to join them, you can subscribe for free on iTunes through the podcast. If you have a question for me, you can always ask. 888-99-CHART.
Did you get your dose of Steve today? Steve Peasley's market commentary can't always put things right in the market, but it can put things into perspective. There for you every morning on InvestTalk.com.
We're going to go talk to James in San Diego. How are you doing, James?
How you doing, Steve?
Good. Thank you for calling.
Okay, my question is this. I have in my retirement account, my 401k that I have from still the last company where I was working for.
Okay.
It's about $250,000.
Okay.
I was told that I was looking at a Roth, but someone was telling me because I was, I have a tax-deferred account, I have to roll it into another tax-deferred.
Correct.
Straight IRA. Okay, now I want to stay aggressive because I'm 45.
Oh, yeah, you need to be.
Mm-hmm. So I want to be able to go and look at some companies. Let's put it this way. If I'm going to roll it over to another Roth, traditional IRA,
right?
There's so many different funds you can choose from.
That's right.
I have no idea where to start. I want to be able to just do some research on my own and look at various things, even if I have to roll over to you guys' company. I wouldn't have no problems with that.
Let's talk about that for a minute, James. You can roll it over into any kind of account, IRA account. You can roll it over to your bank and just buy CDs if you want to.
But let me ask you something, though. With all these banks falling like flies, how do I know? Because I'm with a credit union right now. So.
Yeah, I wouldn't suggest that, by the way. I'm just saying you can. You can roll it over to a particular mutual fund family, like Vanguard. I wouldn't suggest that either.
Really?
Nope. This is why, James. If you want to buy mutual funds, I don't have any problem with that. But you can roll it over to a company like Schwab or a company like even Fidelity. And they offer thousands of no-load mutual funds from other fund families.
Okay.
But if you roll it over to Vanguard, all you will be able to pick is Vanguard funds.
Oh.
So if you go into, like, let's say, Schwab One program, they have a mutual fund program called Schwab One. Mm-hmm. They offer thousands of mutual funds that are no load, no commissions, mm-hmm. from all these different mutual funds, even Vanguard's. You can buy Vanguard at the Schwab, and there's no cost to buy it, no cost to sell it, but they do have a holding period, which I don't like. What I'm saying is you try to give yourself maximum flexibility, James. If you don't know how to pick stocks, that's not your forte yet, or you're just learning, then I would suggest that you would not try to do it yourself.
Okay.
But you can pick funds. You just pick good fund managers, and, I can give you hints on how to do that. That's okay. But, if you want someone like me, a registered investment advisor, to manage your fund, we would roll your account from your old 401k into an IRA. Mm-hmm. And then in that IRA, we would say, okay, do you want to be aggressive? Do you want to be conservative? What do you want to be? We have programs for that. And then we buy you stocks. I buy the same stocks for my clients as I do for myself at mm-hmm. the same price, same time. So you're really following me, what I'm doing with my money.
Now, you mentioned Schwab.
Yes.
Because of the variety of programs they have.
Yes.
How do I do research to find out other companies like Schwab?
Well, it's hard to do that because, you know, you read different various magazines, and over time you become more sophisticated.
Yes.
And I'll tell you, there's only two really that do what I just described, Fidelity and Schwab for mutual funds. No load. I'm talking about no load, meaning no commissions.
Yes.
Because that's the only funds you should be dealing with. No back-end loaded, no front-end loaded. Did you hear me talk about back-end and front-end loaded funds?
Yes, I got that clearly.
Yeah, do not buy those. You don't need to. They just take money out of your pocket when there's just as many no-load funds or as there is loaded funds.
And I assume you guys also have no-load.
We have a program, a mutual fund program, that has no-loads funds that we buy for clients. But then again, the problem with that is, you know, each mutual fund has its own expense ratio inside it that's kind of hidden. But then if you hire me to manage that mutual fund program, now you're paying me and the mutual fund. And I'm worth it, but you're still adding two layers of costs.
Yeah.
If you do individual stocks, there isn't that second layer of cost, just me. But I'm a little bit more expensive there, too, also, because it's a lot more work for us. But.
So dealing with Schwab and Fidelity, I have to deal with those type of costs?
Not if you pick them, though. If you pick them, the only cost is the mutual fund itself, what they charge. If you hire somebody like me to manage your portfolio, then you have to pay me to do that for you.
So I just need to decide which direction I want to go.
Yeah, or you can go into an individual stock program and you get rid of that mutual fund layer cost, but you have to pay a penny a share trading, at least we do for us.
Yeah.
And James, if you want to sit down and talk about it, just call me up. I'll talk. I'm not a guy, James, that will try to push you one way or another. I'll just give you all the options.
Sounds good.
Thanks, James. Appreciate the call. Time for our new feature. We have a new feature, everybody. We're going to call it Invest Talk Personal. It's about a day-to-day money decision that makes a difference in your life. So, and this one is, can you sell a reverse mortgage, which we talked about. Now, according to the president of National Reverse Mortgage Lenders Association, a homeowner can get a reverse mortgage and then put the home up for sale. But why do it? As I said before, it defeats the purpose of having a reverse mortgage. But you can do it. Remember, reverse mortgages are expensive to get. No, you don't want to do that. Okay? But a reverse mortgage is a good last resort if your property rich and cash poor and you're older and you want to stay in your home. It's a decision that can work for you. Now, do you have a question for Invest Talk Personal? You can ask it on our 24-hour listen line. 888-99-CHART. You can send me a note through Contact Steve on investtalk.com or you can do it through Twitter. Send your message to @InvestTalk. That's InvestTalk with two T's. InvestTalk.
Steve has a concise info sheet on managing a bond portfolio. Fixed income offers a lot of value points that equities do not. That's just one of the recorded webinars that you can access anytime when you're an InvestTalk insider. Sign up for free on InvestTalk.com.
Let's go talk to Jack in Oceanside. How you doing, Jack?
The other day I was watching CNBC, and they had an executive on representing a company called Square, and they've partnered up with Twitter, and they have a service where you put this little Square device on your cell phone, and it's a credit card reader.
Yep.
And it allows you to make credit card charges.
On your cell phone or your iPad?
Yes. So he was saying that the company Square and Twitter trade on the secondary market. What does that mean? And is this the public allowed to invest in companies that are on the secondary market?
We ordered that little device today.
Today.
So it's kind of interesting that you're talking to us about it. I like that little darn device.
I was interested in that service because this is the type of technology that will allow us to eventually become a cashless society.
It's the next step.
In other words, I could be at a garage sale and I want to buy something, and all I have to do is the person has this attachment on their cell phone. I swipe my credit card, and it could be a $10 purchase or a $5 purchase.
Yeah, an attachment, by the way, is free.
And of course, you know, the Federal Reserve, they would like nothing better than not to have to deal with the nuisance of paper money.
Yeah.
But in any event, they said that these two stocks, Twitter and Square, trade on the secondary market. Is that available to the public?
It's not traded on any exchange, obviously, because that's what the secondary market is. But it's just along the lines of Facebook and a lot of these other social networks and technology companies that their shares are trading hands privately, and there are brokers out there. I don't know any off the top of my head because we don't deal in that market. But there are brokers out there that will find the shares for you and, you know, get them. But you tend to have a lot of money. You can't just throw a couple thousand dollars at
it. Yeah, Jack, you and I don't know, maybe you are, but I'm not rich enough. They want to sell you 10 million shares or a million shares or, you know, half a million shares. You know, it's big blocks.
These shares tend to be exchanged to large institutions, giant hedge funds, other companies that are looking to take a strategic stake in those type of companies.
And you have to determine what's the price.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like negotiating. It's like a haggle. I'll give you $12 a share. No, I want $72 a share.
Yeah, and what does that equate to when it comes to the total market cap of the company? It's difficult, but it's not impossible.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Thank you.
Let's go to Paul in Mountain View. How you doing, Paul?
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. How can I help you?
I was interested in getting a life insurance policy.
Okay.
So I decided to give you guys a call, maybe for some advice.
What type of policy are you thinking about?
Well, I'm looking for a policy to, so if something happens to me, it would go to my wife, and as far as take care of her medical bills.
Okay. Yeah, what I would do is go for a term policy. Those are the policies that we like. We're not a big fan of universal life or anything like that, or variable life. Stick with a term policy, and you know, like you said, you want to take care of your wife in case you die and make sure that she's in good financial footing, and that's important. But a term policy would probably be the cheapest and the best way to do that.
Now, what about the universal? You don't like those, do you?
No, because their selling points are good. You know, it sounds great because you're saving money and it's creating a cash balance that you can tap into later. But really, all it is a lot of fees that are compounded inside that you don't really see. They don't tell you about how costly it is to you on a yearly basis. And you'll do better by buying a term policy for cheaper and then investing that money into an IRA or just in the market in general, in even just an index fund. And that's what they're going to do anyway, is probably put you in some sort of an index. So you can do better in mutual funds and find some good mutual funds out there that will do much better with a lower fee base on an annual basis.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Paul. That's a great question. It's always important to have life insurance policy, or not always, but if you have people that you want to take care of, that you are taking care of, whether it's your kids, your parents, your spouse, whatever it is, you want to be able to take care of them. But don't get talked into an insurance policy if you don't need it. If you're young and you don't really have dependents, there's no need in having a life insurance policy. It's just an added cost that's really not going to do you much good. And there's no one that really needs that money in case you die. So be cognizant of that. Don't just get talked in. Life insurance sounds great. It's a great product for certain people. But try to stick with term life and make sure it's only covering the people that are dependent on you. And make sure you have the right amount of coverage so that they will be secure.
Call us now as we move into the final segment of the day, 888-99-CHART.
What are small cap stocks? What makes them act differently than large cap stocks? What's your question? Why not ask it now at 888-99-CHART on InvestTalk. Thanks for being a podcast subscriber, and we do want to hear your investing experiences. We've all grown over the years through our experiences, good and bad. You get to be anonymous, and the rest of us will enjoy knowing that we're not the only one to make a turn when maybe we should have gone straight. So we hope you'll join us on the podcast. Thanks for listening. This is InvestTalk, a ready source of investing answers. You just have to ask. Talk to Steve about any money matter as we move into the final segment of the day. 888-99-CHART is how to get through right now.
You're listening to an encore presentation of InvestTalk. Please call with your questions and comments, though. 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART. And Steve will answer them on the next InvestTalk.
888-99-CHART is our number, everybody. You can reach us. We have lines open, 888-992-4278. Let's go to Julia and Julian.
Hi. I have a question. I'm about 55 years old, and I'm a novice and don't really know where to start.
Okay.
I would like to get into the market probably with a mix of stocks and bonds and cash.
Okay.
I'm wondering what percentage you would recommend of each one.
There is a rule of thumb. It depends on you and how aggressive and how much money you want to invest. You know, if you're just starting out, I would be very timid about getting in the market right now.
Okay.
Your experience level is very low, so you want to be very careful. There's a rule of thumb that your age dictates how much bonds you should have. So if you're 55, 55% of your money should be in bonds. I'm not buying that rule of thumb because there are times when being in bonds is just terrible and times when they're better to be in bonds. The time not to be in bonds is when interest rates are low, because interest rates will probably rise. You're not going to get very good yield. So it'd be better to go and do dogs of the Dow, high dividend paying, very big companies will get you more money, generally speaking. And don't buy too much of any one company. There's some rules. We never, for instance, I never buy more than 3 to 5% of a company, my overall portfolio. So that means you have a number of stocks. You can also invest using ETFs. You know what those are? Exchange-traded funds. They're like mini mutual funds, and you can buy sectors. Let's say you think the medical sector is a good place. Well, there's a number of ETFs that you could just give you instant diversification by ETF. You might want to start with the ETFs.
Now, as far as the taxes on ETFs, are you taxed on the gains like you would be in a mutual fund?
Yes. When you sell it, though. And unlike the mutual funds where you get capital gains distributed to you, even though
you
made, that doesn't happen in ETFs.
Oh, okay.
Only when you sell it, like a stock. You make gains or you have losses, that's when you have to pay the taxes.
Okay.
Thanks, Julie. Appreciate the call. Good luck.
Thank you.
Hope it works for you. 888-99-CHART. There is no set it and forget it in retirement, everybody. There's a list of questions and answers on this article. And some of the questions and answers I think we should talk about. One, and we've had this question before, but it never hurts to refresh our memory. One of the questions was, a guy was 38 years old, and he wanted to know if he should roll his money into a Roth instead of a regular IRA, 38 years old. And, you know, the problem with answering that question is you got to do some guessing. So as soon as you roll that money over, as soon as you move it from a regular IRA to a Roth IRA, you now have to pay income tax on all the money that you're rolling over. And therefore, it's added to your adjusted gross income for that particular year. So what's your income tax rate? Then you have to figure out, well, what's your tax rate going to be in retirement? If you think it's going to be really high in retirement, then, yeah, you might want to roll it over if you're 38 years old because you have lots of years to grow the money. Remember, in a Roth, the money grows and no taxes ever are owed on that again. So if you're in a high tax bracket in your retirement and you get to take money out of your Roth, but there's no taxes owed on it, so you don't have to pay tax on it. Now, what if you're in a low tax bracket in retirement? Well, maybe you should leave it in the regular IRA. There's no quick, clear, concise answer. There is none. It's a judgment call. And I'll tell you what there's kind of ballparking. I like Roth IRAs when you're younger. I would probably suggest, why don't you keep the regular IRA, but don't contribute it to anymore and open up a Roth IRA. Put all your money in there. That way we don't have to pay taxes on it. Just my kind of, that's how I think about these things. You know, so there's different things. Also, one thing I wanted to mention. You know how you get those Social Security, you go and you can find out how much money you're going to get in Social Security, and let's say you're 60 years old today and you're going to retire at 66, and you look at it and say, oh, I'm going to get $2,200 a month. Yay! If you decide to retire early, you're not going to get $2,200. If you retire at 62 or 60 or next year, 3 years, you're not going to get it. because they're basing it on the same amount of contributions you're making into the Social Security system until the day you retire. So if you're retiring early, don't think you're going to get that exact amount of money when you, you know, that the Social Security says you're going to get. Think about that. It's time to close for the day. You've heard about our new InvestTalk Risk Analyzer. You can use it for free at InvestTalk.com. It's kind of fun. It's really interesting. Then you can send me your portfolio, and I can compare the risk of your portfolio with your risk score. Give you a score of both your portfolio and your personal risk score. Kind of fun. Anyways, go take that little 3-4 question test. It's really simple at InvestTalk.com. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley. On behalf of Justin Klein, everyone at KPP Financial, we hope you'll join us again on the next InvestTalk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.